www.thebrainfarm.com.
This is Chris Evans recording a Storage Unpacked podcast. I'm here with Martin. How are you, Martin?
Yeah, not too bad, Chris. How are you?
Yep, I'm okay, I think. I guess notwithstanding a new virus variant coming out, or all the work we're having to do for Log4j and the run-up to Christmas, and I don't know, it's okay, not too bad. What about you?
Yeah, it's a perfect run-up to Christmas, isn't it? Suddenly working from home directive. Yeah,
well, working from home, fixing your Log4j problems.
Yeah, trying to herd developers to fix their Log4j issues or get their code tested against the right versions and things like that and the mitigations. It's all good fun.
And we've gone round the loop again with yet another virus variant. Omicron or Omicron or Micron, however you want to pronounce it.
Omicron, that would have been an interesting lead into if we had some flash storage to talk about.
I know, if only they'd said they wanted to do a podcast, we could have used that. What a wasted opportunity.
But hey, in the UK, you can go to a Christmas party, but you can't go to the office.
So last year you could go to the office, but not a Christmas party. This year you can go to a Christmas party and not the office.
Something like that. That's the directives, yeah.
Really, really clear and sensible. There you go.
But we're all boosted, aren't we?
Yes, I've had mine. I'm done. So I'm 75% protected.
Yeah.
You think you've had yours, haven't you?
I've had mine, yeah.
And now they're going to roll it out. We're going to get the army in. They're going to get everybody in to help the push towards Christmas.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see. And also interested to see what Boris is going to come out with and say that he never went to or never did next. It'll turn out he's going to not be the father of his own children or something like that.
Well, I'm working on a quiz for work, and one of the questions I was going to have was how many children does Boris Johnson have? And I was going to accept any answer on the grounds that he doesn't appear to know either.
Yeah, anything over six, I think, is probably an acceptable answer.
Yeah, I believe so.
Mm, interesting. It's changed on the Wikipedia page. It used to say, I think it now says seven, but it used to say at least six, which is a fascinating way of describing somebody's progeny count, isn't it?
Yeah.
There you go. Okay, anyway, enough of that. Gosh, we're waffling on it right off in a different tangent. We're supposed to be talking about storage here and file systems this week. Actually, this is, I think, one of the things that has come out of our intention to talk about stuff that's come out of reInvent. And I thought it'd be interesting because I was completely surprised at one of the announcements, just didn't expect it to be there. And it just suddenly dawned on me that we're seeing a bit of a rapid uptick in the number of file systems that are being released by AWS into their general sort of pool of natively supported file systems. And I thought it'd be a good thing to talk about. Did you, just as a side issue, did you say anything at reInvent you thought was interesting, or did you watch any of the keynotes?
I did watch some of the keynotes. I quite like Werner's keynote. As per usual, he's quite amusing. I did like when he put all the services up and said, by the way, this is your fault. You keep asking for them.
Yeah, absolutely. I did tweet on something this morning when he was talking about APIs, and his last point said, in no way allow any of the actual information as to how this is it, the implementation details to leak out. And I thought that was really good because initially I was thinking, wow, you want to be really defensive about it? And then when he was explaining it, you think, oh no, what he means is you don't want anybody to bypass or circumvent the way the API was designed to work and what it was trying to do. Mm. And we used to see that, didn't we, years ago with all of the different API calls in Windows, where if you knew those undocumented ones, you could do some things you shouldn't be theoretically allowed to do. So I think that was, hit that little bit, I think, about APIs was really fascinating. I really liked that.
Yeah, so did I, and I think it just points up to that. And I hope it is the case with Amazon that their APIs are fully documented. There's no such thing as an undocumented API call. Because as soon as you have an undocumented API call, somebody discovers it and uses it.
Yeah, exactly. And that was part of his premise for those points. Interesting stuff. But let's talk about file systems. Now, at reInvent, there were two new ones announced. Well, sort of, not quite. NetApp had already announced a little bit earlier that there was FSx for NetApp on tap. They had done that a couple of months before the actual event, although they were publicizing it at the event or very, very close to it. And then there was FSx for OpenZFS or ZFS, depending on how you pronounce it. Yet another FSx option. Now, I just did a quick check on all of these and just a sort of created a timeline. So EFS first released in 2015, and I saw that as a very basic sort of Linux, Unix implementation of a file system. And there were issues with that, which we can always talk about if we want to. There was the Windows Server implementation, which was November 2018. There was Lustre at the same time. And then the two that were released fairly close to each other were the NetApp on tap and the OpenZFS. Now, I assume, correct me if I'm wrong, FSX, I think that just means file system extension, would you say? Something like that, perhaps?
I don't know. I've never really thought about it. I knew I've thought it was file system, but I've never really thought it was anything in particular or just X is a variable. Who knows?
Could be. Yeah, could be. So EFS, back in 2015, I did a little bit of work looking at it, and it was a bit weird because it had some odd issues, like you could only get a status on the file system every hour. So things like utilization and so on were once an hour. And there were some other issues with the way you deployed it and it used it. It was a bit clunky, a bit simple. And obviously since then, things like Windows Server was brought SMB support because that wasn't there originally. And it's just interesting to see that from the very beginning of Amazon thinking that they'd develop all their own services, when it's come to file systems, even though they have had their own service, they've decided to build native services to support very specific file systems.
It is interesting. And certainly the fact, I always thought it was weird. The two initial FSX offerings I actually thought were a bit odd. Mm-hmm. The idea that you'd have a separate one for SMB and a separate one for Lustre, which is basically an NFS mount, I believe, always struck me as a bit odd. And now we've got these two new ones, NetApp ONTAP and OpenZFS. I think the fact they've been launched very closely together, it almost feels like, if you think about the history of ZFS, almost feels like somebody's trolling NetApp.
Just a little bit. We're bearing in mind we know what the bit of the history and the origins between those two products. Yeah, absolutely. I think the interesting thing is, if I look at it, I think, first of all, Windows Server, I can sort of see the need for SMB support because it's a mess to try and support that properly. You know, you need to have, although there is software that can do that outside of that, you need to have that. And maybe that wasn't available to take inside of Amazon and use the way they might have wanted to. So the answer was deploy Windows Server. It seems a bit like a hammer to crack a nut to me, you know, deploying an entire Windows Server just to get the file system access. But, you know, so be it. That's the way Windows is built.
Yeah, but I've always wondered why they didn't extend EFS. But and then they ended FSX for Windows Server. It just seemed to be a bit of an odd thing to do. But understandable, I suppose.
Yeah, so why not build out that proprietary system? I mean, that's the thing, isn't it? Maybe it was a licensing issue, maybe it was a time, maybe it was a cost, and maybe they just looked at it and said, why should we bother when people are used to the idea of Windows and what it looks like and just want something that they're going to be able to guarantee is 100% compatible?
Yeah, well, I just wondered with the reason why they didn't bundle it into EFS is because I believe EFS at the back end is still storing things in S3 objects.
Oh yeah, that would be pretty ugly, wouldn't it?
And I think that might be even more ugly in SMB than it is in NFS. That explains some of your reasons about certs and things like that, but it's more complex to do. Yeah. Whereas if you look at things like Lustre, Windows Server, they're kind of built on EBS volumes, I'm assuming, they're actually very much closer to the traditional product, whereas EFS is a gateway into S3.
So there you go. There's a great reason. Now, here's one other thing I thought was quite interesting. I thought I'd look and see what compatibility there was to be able to move data between them. And, well, there's an opportunity to put a new service in place that charges you for that. So you could use something called AWS Data Sync, which allows you to move data between S3, the FSX for Windows, EFS, and your on-premises solutions. Just uses SMB and NFS. It doesn't do anything clever, although it's obviously doing something clever in the sense of the way that it schedules the actual copies and the number of threads it does, but it doesn't integrate with Lustre, ONTAP, or OpenZFS yet. But you're charged a nice 1.25 or 1.25 cents per gig per transfer, so nice little money earner.
Oh, it is, and Amazon do very much push this as a migration tool. Push it very much heavily to customers as a tool for migrating your data into the cloud.
Right.
I don't think we're expecting people to use it heavily to pull data out of the cloud. But yes, certainly they push it as one of their migration tools.
Okay. Here's another angle I thought when I looked at it, at why they may have gone down this route. And I was trying to work out whether time to market was an issue here that was worth considering. So the quicker Amazon can get better quality file system services deployed, it almost becomes a bit of a land grab. You know, we're in there, we've got those things in place. They work better than yours do. I wondered whether that was the case. So, and I'm going and looking at the other two platforms, it doesn't look like they've got a massive amount of competition so far.
I'm not at the moment. I don't think so. I think you're perfectly right on that.
And we'll come back and talk about that in a minute, of course.
Yeah. Yeah, I was just thinking about it. And one product which Faye Network obviously was announced in September, which really did make sense to me, was the FSX for NTAP, but actually made for NetApp on tap. That made a lot of sense to me because it gave a much more fully featured NAS environment. It's quite clever, but it's got some quite nice things. The way it will tier, so you can have a smaller amount of flash disk, and then you can have slower disk at the back end, so it will tier for you. That made a lot of sense to me, and it was a better way of getting up, as far as I could see, is getting a high performance file system, if you can call ONTAP a high performance file system, within your cloud environment. I'm still not quite sure the rationale for OpenZFS, apart from that it's but they can probably do it themselves and they don't need to partner with anybody to do it.
Yeah. I think the NetApp one has a number of other things as well, hasn't it? It's got the benefit of dual protocol. So now you're not building separate solution for EFS and then one through Windows. You can do both protocols in the same solution. However, there's also that potential. And although I haven't really managed to find out whether it's definitely true, people tell me it is. I haven't seen it in action. But if you imagine the ability to replicate from on-premises into the cloud, yeah, the snap mirror snapshot features that are in the NetApp product are pretty smooth at getting the deltas done and syncing up and making all of that work. And it works really well. If you've ever used that on-prem, which I'm sure you have many times, Martin, you know how good that is. If you need to snap copy something, you want to move things around, you want to refresh that copy. And for me, that's the sort of those are the killer pieces here, that technology is so mature that being able to do that from an on-prem into the cloud to do some work and then freeze that and refresh that, you know, another hour later or whenever you want to is really, really powerful.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Doesn't ONTAP run in at least one of the other big clouds, if not both of them?
Yes. So it runs across all three, in fact. So you can't, yeah.
So you've got a nice environment at that point if you do want to run multi-cloud.
So you've got Azure NetApp files and you have got a Google implementation as well. So you could theoretically, although again, I haven't seen it demonstrated. I've sort of asked the question, but I haven't seen it for definite, that you should be able to replicate between them. But what is not clear at this point is I don't think you can expose the network connectivity to do that yet from Amazon, which is the bit you're going to have to do, aren't you? You're going to have to expose the right networking part of ONTAP. Yes, you could expose the front-end connectivity, but will you expose the ports that do the replication? So I'm guessing that the intention at some point is that makes a joined-up, seamless capability to replicate between all three. And when you've got on-prem as well, that's a very powerful way of, you know, running your setup if you need to be able to use cross-application, cross-cloud services.
I was just thinking with NetApp, going pretty much all in with some of the Kubernetes stuff, multi-cloud Kubernetes becomes something which they could actually help to build as well.
Yes, absolutely. So that questions, and that moves, that's a very good segue to the next question I was going to ask, actually, whether that multi-cloud, multi-vendor really becomes relevant or not, because I've seen lots of conversation over the last few weeks where people have talked about multi-cloud and whether people should be replicating between clouds, spreading applications between clouds. The reason being partly because of the outage we had on Amazon last week. And it makes me want to ask that question, will customers continually be moving their data between clouds? Now, bear in mind that outage last week, and if you were putting everything on a file system and not in block devices, potentially, theoretically, you could move your application from one cloud to another, but that's quite a massive piece of work to make that work, isn't it?
Yeah, it adds massive complexity. I mean, you'd expect it, but I did see an Amazon essay saying, if you think multi-cloud is the answer to this, SA solutions architect, you may want to think again, because you look at the complexity, there may be some better way of doing it. I would tend to agree, although Amazon themselves might want to learn some of the lessons, which they appear to, like having their global landing pad in their least reliable region, and only there was not the best well-architected system in the world.
No. But
I think we're right. I think multi-cloud, certainly from a pure application availability point of view, will bring in lots of complexity and lots of questions. You're going to have to ask yourselves lots of architectural questions. For instance, I'll bring back to Kubernetes. What Kubernetes distribution are you going to run at that point? And they're all subtly different. Now, I understand what you might want data mobility. You might want the ability to actually stand up best of breed in each of the cloud providers. If Amazon have got a better service than Google at something, you might want to do that. I do think sometimes best of breed is a bit of a trap, but I can see that. But are people really going to run out applications of the same application out of two or even three different cloud providers? that just feels like a lot of complexity and hard work to me. I think you'd be better at looking at how you regionally distribute your application around a single cloud provider.
Yeah, I agree. I think it could be done. I don't think there's any reason why you couldn't do it. But it's that classic thing, isn't it, of the complexity of implementation may well massively outweigh any potential benefit you could get. And you could end up finding that by trying to build something that's super complex, you actually build in more potential points of failure that you hadn't thought about that occur more often than it would have done if it was just sitting in the single cloud. So you might actually introduce issues by doing it.
Yeah, I think so. And the other thing which you do, because you're building in this massive complexity, is that one of the beauties of cloud in theory is your agility, the ability to do things fast. Now, if you're trying to write an application and orchestrate it so it'll run across 2-3 different cloud providers, probably actually going to start killing your agility. Your responsiveness to your internal customers is not going to be great.
Agreed. Now, I could see, you talk about best of breed, I could see that you might get into a position where one of the vendors has a particularly good feature that does one particular task that the others just simply don't have and you want to use it, but all your data sits elsewhere. And you may just say, well, do you know what? I could snap mirror that using the NetApp solution into the other cloud, make it available, do whatever I need to do and just replicate the data back. That sort of tactical use of multi-cloud, I can see, is more likely to come about in the short term because people just see the opportunity. But then that might get negated when the opposition says, oh, they've got that facility, we better do something similar. And very quickly that gets caught up. And then that reason is sort of kicked out, to be honest.
Yeah, but I think that's an interesting that idea of a tactical solution. And actually cloud would enable you to do that. You say that you're running in AWS, Google spin up something, because you can replicate between the two clouds and it's relatively easy to do if it's NetApp filer-based technology, you're going to want, a lot of people understand that, you can get the data in there in an effective way. And then AWS, 2 years later, 18 months later, announce a similar service. You think, yeah, I can use that. And you can just stand down. You can pull out all your Google stuff if you want to. It's gone, it's done. It's not a mass data migration. It's relatively easy to do.
You effectively switch off your snap mirror and all that code and you just use it directly, which is really quite impressive.
Yeah.
Isn't there really, that's what the cloud should be, that agility, that flexibility to be able to do stuff without having to be locked in too much, and that ability just to be dynamic and to pick the services and use them. So I think if we can make the replication and the interoperability between platforms at the data level work, then those sort of things, I think, become much more practical.
Yeah, I do. I think it's why we're still important, Chris. It's why the storage world is still important, because it's about that ability to move data around. It's that data mobility, which we know is important. And things like the technologies from NetApp and other vendors, actually, they know how to do this. People use it for development. They use it to take DR copies. It's bread and butter to them at the moment. And so enabling customers to do that seems to be a very sensible thing.
Yeah, two other things. I mean, one other angle I had a look at there was to think about billing, consistent billing. I don't think it's a big deal that you're having to take billing from different places. It'd be nice if you could just say, well, NetApp, you offer the service across the cloud, just charge us once. That would be quite useful. Whether NetApp would get to that point, who knows? And the second one is really, I don't think there's any benefit in moving data around in order to reduce your costs. I just don't think that the margins are there to make it worthwhile even considering, a bit like it wasn't worth it with your S3 stuff, unless you had a very specific, niche reason why you could save money.
I think you can save money. And I think, but also having these common services will probably drive things down to a much more consistent view. I think there is savings to be made. I do think it's interesting, but one of the other things which Amazon announced at reInvent is something which I've been crying out for a while and lots of people have, and that is the Glacier-like auto tier, which isn't offline, so the online, I think that's very useful. So it means they feel very much more similar to the Google Cloud Storage, which automatically moves between. You don't have to worry about it dropping offline. So I think this is what we're beginning to see. We're beginning to see some convergence in how people do things.
Yeah. So let's talk about that wider market then. Let's talk about what the other offerings are. I thought this was an interesting area to touch on because it either dispels or it sort of reinforces the message that Amazon see a better way of doing this with partnering. So I had a quick look, and you've got Azure Files, called Azure Files, which is part of the Azure platform, and you've got Azure NetApp Files, which I hadn't really looked at it, but I always wondered why they called it Azure NetApp Files, but now I see that the original offering is called Azure Files. It sort of makes sense why that naming standard is there. And then in the Google system, you've got FileStore Basic, Enterprise, and High Scale. The Enterprise and High Scale solutions are preview only. So I looked at that and thought, does that mean FileStore Basic was always the first solution they implemented? And could Enterprise and High Scale be based on Elastifile, which they acquired in 2019? Well, I think High Scale could be potentially, but it's not as mature in the other platforms, is it?
No, I think that's probably summed up a lot about Google Cloud at times. It's not quite as mature and not quite as enterprise ready, but they're catching up. I think you might be right. The Enterprise and High Scale could well be based on Elastifile, certainly for High Scale one, I would expect to be. Otherwise, why buy them?
Yep. Yeah, why wouldn't they be using that technology? And it's 2 years since they've acquired them, so you'd think they'd have done something with it by now. Preview would make a lot of sense, wouldn't it? And obviously, I should have mentioned the fact that NetApp is available there. Now, as far as I'm aware, from you look across the board, I picked out those services because, to my understanding, these are fully API integrated. So by that we mean, if you're in the Google APIs or any of the other APIs, you can do this through code, and therefore it should also integrate into things like identity management and all that sort of stuff. So these solutions are well embedded in there, but there's nothing to say that there aren't other file solutions out there that you could run that sit on top of the platform but don't directly integrate into the API. So we could still build other solutions that are cross-platform. We could deploy other solutions as well, and I'm sure there are plenty out there. Weka, I think, do one, for instance.
Oh, yeah, there are plenty of them. You could deploy Spectrum Scale in the cloud if you want.
Yes, yeah, that is true. Yeah.
And you can take the protocol nodes and you can present those out, and you can prevent NFS and SMB up there on top of EBS, or you can start doing some tiering into S3 if you want. So, yeah, there are plenty of solutions where you could do it yourself, but then it's that supportability. Do you really want that service unless you really, really need it? Yeah, so I think that there's lots out there. There are big engineering companies or engineering-driven companies. Netflix have done their own file system in the cloud, which they call MesFS, which they use sharding across S3, as far as I can see. They do some very cool things. It looks quite smart. So there obviously no one product will fits all use cases, and some people will go off and do their own thing. I think the thing with EBS means that a lot of these things are relatively easy to do if you know how a file system works. You can do it. It just looks like a block volume too. So people can do that if they want. It's then how you gateway into things like S3 and things, which becomes a bit more interesting.
Yeah. And I think if they're native, then there's an opportunity for the cloud providers to put those native interfaces in. And then I think perhaps what we will see, or we may see, is the value add that comes along from adding things like automation, workflow, triggering, other bits of automation that come off content being created and stuff, a bit like the way they've done in S3. There's that opportunity to add that natively into the platform.
Yeah.
And that's where it could become a little bit more interesting than just you building your own file system. And that's what I think would be quite good fun to see.
Oh, yeah. Well, building your own file system, unless you're a top-level engineering company, is not something you really want to get into. Your risk of losing your data is probably too high.
Yeah. So, and if you're running in the cloud, unless you need some very specific native feature of a particular file system, you know, one of those might be performance, but it might be the way to replicate data in or out or something like that. I can't think of a lot of good reasons for saying I wouldn't take one of the ones that are available now, because there's not a lot more I can see you would get other than what they're offering.
I don't think so. You take one which is available now, or you take one which has been implemented by another third party. I mean, back in the day, we used to look at the NetApp environment, and we used to think it was the Swiss Army knife for storage. So actually, this is what they've produced, really. Well, I'm assuming you can't do blocking FSx for NetApp.
I don't know. I haven't looked, actually. You'd think, you'd think they'd ban that, wouldn't you? It just seemed a bit of a silly thing to try and do. But then again, why not? Maybe you can. Yeah. I haven't tried.
Almost returns to what NetApp used to be, and that was for the network appliance for network file system.
Yes, absolutely. Interesting. So let's move on and ask the question, what should customers do? What is the right choice if you are a customer sitting out here listening to us saying, there's so many different file systems, what's the best route to go?
Best route to go.
It's a tricky one.
It's a tricky one. First of all, we have to ask the question what your operating system ecosystem's like. Are you running Windows and Linux? Because if you are, you're probably going to end up down the NetApp route.
Yeah.
Because you've got that SMB and NFS, and in theory, you can get both Windows and your Linux boxes to talk to these devices in the best possible way. Obviously, you can get a Linux device or a Windows device to talk NFS or SMB if you want. Windows NFS implementation is better than it used to be. That's not hard, but it's getting better. I do think, actually, I still feel like, but within AWS or maybe even within GCP and Azure, I'm not so aware of those, the NetApp option isn't a bad offering at all.
Yeah, I think when you look at the way that you can use multi-protocol and you can get the replication is protocol independent, and you can do things like a common authentication system between the two different platforms, and that the data can be coming from either SMB or NFS, and it can be shared. So you could have something feeding stuff in that's coming in through SMB, going out to NFS-based services to actually be used. All of those things make you look at the NetApp implementation and think, if I'd needed all of those flexible solutions, I'd go with that. I think whatever you do, you'd need to stick with one. If you decide you're going down the route of NetApp, look at all your requirements and then stick with it. Because if you try and chop and change, you're going to end up with data everywhere, and that's going to be a right old mess.
I still think you might end up with that, because you may look at things, and this will come down to performance as well. So you might have a NetApp as your general purpose, for instance. Mm-hmm. But if you need lots of IOPS, lots of performance, you may find that your better option is FSx for Lustre. But you don't want to keep everything on FSx for Lustre, because that's going to cost you an awful lot of money.
So, yeah, now that's interesting, though. If you look at the NetApp capability, the fact that you have got the ability to tier,
yeah,
it then makes you question how many different instances will they put behind that to allow you to say, I want to run it on this type of instance, that type of instance. They probably won't make it too obvious that you're running on an instance, because that defeats the object of cloud. But it potentially, because of the connectivity we're starting to see with NVMe devices and all of the stuff that Nitro offers, potentially you can see that NetApp could be run in an environment which gives you access to hard drives, NVMe drives, SSDs, a whole range. You could tier across those. You can put it out, you know, really fast 10, 100 gig networks. So in fact, it could offer a very, very high performance system in this instance.
Yeah, it could do. And I think that'd be interesting to see what is its performance and what is its latency like within the AWS environment. I have no idea. It'd be interesting to hear from anybody from NetApp or anybody who's listening who would want to come and talk to us about how it works as a performance environment within something like AWS.
We've had the presentations and we've seen some of that data from some Tech Field Day events a few years ago. They did some demonstrations of it, but I haven't seen what it looks like at the moment. But I'd be very interested to understand what opportunities they have within that. You know, whether with all of the new instances that are coming out and all the new different media types, whether they've got the ability to give you that variation. That would be very interesting, I think. And just generally just understand where it's headed.
Yeah, it's one of those. It might actually be an interesting podcast in general at some point to talk to them about what they've done and how fully featured it is. Like, for instance, we talked about the tiering between flash and hard drives potentially within that environment. But can they tier down to S3? Because you can do in a NetApp filer. You can do even at the way the block level works. So you could go down. Can they actually do that all natively within AWS? How do they do it? Is it cost effective? Does it make sense?
Okay, then. So let's... So we think about the futures as we sort of come towards the end of the discussion. Where do we think we're going to head with this in terms of the fact that Amazon's chosen to partner with already, or at least build out 4 different options? Could we see them build out 10 or more? Or do we think that it's a bit of a evolutionary thing that they're testing to see which ones work and expecting some of them to fall by the wayside?
I think yes to both of those questions. I think we will see them partner with more people. I think it will come down to what terms and people can find and agree. What agreements they can come up with. It wouldn't surprise me to see Dell or something like that try to get their services in there somehow. FSx for all Isilon.
FSx for Isilon, wow, yeah.
In fact, probably wouldn't even be very hard to do. So, yeah, something like that would probably make a lot of sense.
I'm fairly sure you can already get Isilon on the Google platform,
yeah, I think you can do it within Azure as well.
Yeah, I think there's quite a big buy-in, isn't there? I mean, one of the things that when you look at these services, the difference here perhaps is that the amount you have to consume or the starting point is quite low.
Yeah.
Whereas I think the Isilon offering is quite high in terms of commit. Yeah. But that's an implementation detail about how well you implement the solution. But yes, that would be an interesting one. I tell you what I'd like to see. I'd like to see maybe Weka.
Yeah.
more native, because you could say that if you want that super high performance file system, they could offer that. And then maybe you've now got a range of Swiss Army Knife, NetApp, super high performance worker, Windows for Windows support. You could see how this could fill out with more and more different offerings.
Yeah, it really depends how hard it is for Amazon and their partners to do. I believe the NetApp aid ONTAP implementation, I mean, I believe that's quite a close partnership.
It is, and originally it was hardware.
Yeah.
They put in NetApp filers in there, and then I think NetApp did the engineering work to allow them to run it on instances. So effectively, you can just say any data center, you can spin up the instance. It's now become software, and then it's just a support issue. Can you support it in that region, and can you bill for it and all the rest of it? Similarly, I think Elastifile instantly was runnable on any Google instance. It ran on generic Google instances, so that was really quite quick to roll out. So you're right, it really depends on, you know, the partnership ability to execute that partnership and make it work, and companies that are prepared to want to work with somebody like Amazon to get this to where it's supportable and available for customers as easily as it would be if it was on-prem.
I don't know whether it's Amazon's a tactical move as well, or even a strategic move, to accept the fact that the future for a lot of companies is hybrid.
Mm.
People want the same things running on both in their cloud environments and they want in their on-premises environments. Now, the best way to do that is with a software which looks the same. No, it doesn't matter where you're running it.
So here's a thought about that in terms about where we think we might head. So let's think about Outposts and how we've seen a bit of a change in that. So originally, Outposts was an entire rack of equipment shipped to you, 42U, plug it in, power, networking, away you go. And we saw at reInvent, they announced the ability to get smaller form factors of server, although they appear to be eye-wateringly expensive for what they are. So I looked at that and thought, I wonder how many services that have been implemented into the cloud, like NetApp on tap, will end up coming back on premises, bundled inside an Outposts that's of smaller form factor, and then you're connecting your local applications and services to that NetApp. And suddenly NetApp aren't selling on-premises hardware anymore. All they're selling is software. And that might be an acceptable position for them. They might be very happy with that.
Oh, it might be. It's an interesting idea. I hadn't really thought about it like that. Amazon just becomes your platform you run anything on, and it doesn't really matter where you are, on or off. They'll always tell you that it's better to run it in their cloud, but for those things where you need it. Yeah, it'd be interesting to see what direction things like Snowcone and Snowball go as well.
Yeah, and the reason I think that one's interesting is if you look at the conversation we had about Vast and Gemini, and they're at them saying they're going to give somebody else the hardware piece to look after, and they just want to basically at some point get to just selling software licenses. NetApp would effectively move customers to that just selling software licenses model. I don't know what the margins are to see whether that makes sense to do or not, but it's certainly one area you could see it ending up heading towards, which could be quite interesting.
Oh, it could be, but it does put, say, the future of some of these companies are well and truly tied to Amazon at that point.
Yeah, you want to be very careful about it, don't you?
Yeah.
If you want to find yourself locked in and then suddenly OpenZFS, bit by bit, is not OpenZFS anymore, but is AWS ZFS or Amazon OpenZFS, and has changed so much that they've added all the features in that they need to basically kick out a NetApp. I mean, how long is that going to take? Is that really practical? It's very difficult to see. So, okay. I mean, the other thing we talked about earlier, and I think is a possible future, is that ability to start adding things like workflow and other capabilities into the platform. And if you can do that with your NetApp and other solutions where you've got something that's a lot more performant in terms of the way you want it to work and mature, but at the same time add all these additional value adds, that's a good reason to go to the cloud first rather than going to keep it on premises.
Yeah, some of those would be interesting. Some of the other Amazon features which you might want in, like notification services and things like that, built in as additional extras, there would be some real value adding that.
And it can't be that hard. Well, it could be, I suppose. Depends on how NetApp wants to keep its on-prem implementations and its cloud implementations separate or aligned, if you know what I mean. So it might offer them a bit of a challenge in terms of being able to implement that. We might see that come maybe first in something like OpenZFS than we do in the more proprietary file systems that are already out there.
Oh, you might too, but I can see. But even in the on-prem, you might have things like notification services going off into your Amazon instances to generate alerts and events and workflows, triggering workflows. So your workflow gets triggered. Something's created on-prem, alert comes through somehow. And then that triggers a cloud workflow.
So I don't want to turn this into a NetApp and ONTAP fest discussion. Far from it. This is not what this is intended to be. But it does make you think about where that could head, in the sense that NetApp have bought various different companies like Spot.
Yeah.
And they're trying to put some thought around managing cloud workloads and deploying cloud workloads. If they become more heavily integrated with Amazon, that gives them a lot more leverage to allow those sort of solutions to work more effectively, you know, because they would have more information to be able to do that. So maybe that is part of the strategy. And again, maybe that's another reason to get them to come and tell us about it.
Yeah, it does. But Chris, it's all these things are about data. You're writing your data in, you're creating alerts, and you're triggering. As soon as you can put some intelligence into that storage tier, or even just like a little nervous system which pings something up to the central brain, which is whichever your cloud provider is, and says, oh, got this. And he says, oh, I'm going to do that with you, or I'm going to do this with that.
Do you think there's any roadblocks in any of this? Do you think there's any challenges that we might hit? I can see there being a challenge in having too many vendors. I can see there being an issue that somebody like Amazon or Google just says, we've decided we're going to just make our own service more mature and you're gone, a bit like they did with the MongoDB debacle. You could see that happening.
Yeah, I could see that happening. Well, we've seen that happen with the MongoDB debacle. We've seen it with the Elastic debacle at the moment. But I can also see that these file services, these block services for Amazon, that's not really what they're interested in. So the partnering with people is not such a bad idea. Their vision, I think, is that everything's going to become object anyway. So this is a 5-10 year stopgap solution. They may be wrong, but I think there's a certain extent that this is what they feel, and that's what we're trying to encourage all the developers and things to move away from traditional file system technologies and moving something into object. I wouldn't be surprised to see Amazon do something with object next. They seem to be tying up the low end of it, the lower performance. I wouldn't be surprised to see them actually try and think about how they actually give you a really high performance object experience as well.
And I would agree, and I think to a certain degree, and I think that if I was looking at what Amazon are doing and where they're heading, I still see that evolution of the hardware, but it's become evolution. So we see new instances, we see Graviton, we see those sort of things coming along. We see the network performance improvements, the disk improvements. But in reality, all of the new services are application focused. They're very much now coming out almost industry vertical focused. Not entirely, because some of them are cross vertical, but some of the technology that they talked about at reInvent is irrelevant almost as to which platform it runs on. It could run on anything. You know, what was it called? There was one that they'd got which you could plug into a device and it would take sensor readings for devices that don't have sensors built in. So it would look at local temperature and things like that and feed that data back.
Yeah.
So you're starting to see them completely step away from the underlying framework infrastructure, the building blocks at the bottom end, and talking more and more, now those are in place, about value-add services. So I wonder whether the file system services is that much of a big deal for them at this stage.
Well, probably not. They need it because it eases everybody's journey. That's what they think about. But it's not a big deal for them, I don't think.
Yeah. Okay. Well, it's going to be interesting to keep an eye on this one. And do you think, I don't know, we'll see in 12 months' time whether, or 2 years' time, whether we're talking about FSx for Weka, FSx for something else, for Spectrum Virtualize. You never know. Let's just
FSx for Vast.
FSx for Vast, yeah. Now we say that. That is not an unreasonable thought.
Don't think so.
Not an unreasonable thought, because the way that they're thinking about their technology is, and this is not going to give any clues away, but when the last conversation I had with Jeff back and forth, he was talking about the next generation of their systems being storage plus. Mm. So what does that plus really mean? You know, it probably means closer integration with other technologies. One of those things could be the cloud. And they've already made that move away from selling physical hardware to being able to say, we'll just get somebody else to do that piece. They use pretty generic hardware. They use containers. They use lots of very easily replicable hardware at the back end. So there's nothing to say that they couldn't easily run this on something like AWS if they had the right back end support for the drives, because the drives are basically shelves of drives that are connected over NVMe. So that is just basically Nitro.
Yeah.
Across a whole range of particular disks. So it's perfectly possible. And that could be a very interesting one. Maybe you've set it there, Martin. Maybe you've beaten them to their marketing announcement for 2023.
We'll have to see.
By pre-announcing it.
Yeah.
Well, we will have to see. But yeah, I'm looking forward to see where this one's going. And I think we should do a follow-up on this one next year. But, you know, for now, thanks very much. Great conversation. And good to catch up again.
Cheers, Chris.
You've been listening to Storage Unpacked. For show notes and more, subscribe at storageunpacked.com. Follow us on Twitter at Storage Unpacked or join our LinkedIn group by searching for Storage Unpacked Podcast. You can find us on all good podcatchers, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. Thanks for listening.